Welcome to Exploring Boys Education, a regular podcast produced by IBSC for leaders and educators in boys' schools around the world. I'm Bruce Collins, IBSC Director of Member Engagement. In this episode, we tackle the complex challenges of raising boys in today's digital landscape with John Boddy, Head of School at the Browning School in New York City. Prompted by adolescence, the universally acclaimed Netflix drama, hailed as TV perfection for its powerhouse performances, innovative direction, and devastating exploration of modern boyhood, online radicalization, and familial trauma, John shares his reflections. We explore the insights sparked by this important storytelling, delving into the often hidden online worlds boys navigate, the associated dangers like the manosphere, and the crucial role educators and schools play in fostering digital literacy, critical thinking, and genuine connection for boys amidst a digital storm. Thank you for joining us, John. It's lovely to have you on Exploring Boys Education again. It's been a while, but I'm looking forward to speaking to you today.
Thank you, Bruce. It's great of you to have me back. I really appreciate it.
John, so what prompted this conversation is your recent blog post, which I read, which reflected on Netflix's adolescence. And it felt particularly timely. You know, I don't know about you, but for me, the series delivered a bit of a gut punch and has since prompted a wave of both personal and professional conversations for me with my daughters, with educators of boys, with other parents, particularly parents, friends of mine who have sons. And so that's why I reached out. I wanted to have this conversation on the back of that. I think it's a timely conversation. And you also wrote this blog post that really, I think, can highlight some of the issues that boys' schools need to be thinking about. I think your post captured some of the raw challenges, John, of raising boys in a digital age. And so I want to start off just by asking you to reflect a little on adolescence and why it was such an important watch for you in the current day and age. And what sort of early insights might it have sparked about the current digital landscape for you?
Well, Bruce, it's super kind and generous even to have read what I wrote, let alone comment so nicely on it. I mean, like, the sort of backstory for me is, you know, our school was about to head on its spring break, and I started hearing from some colleagues, our director of wellness, our chief communications officer, that I had to see this show. And so I watched the four episodes over 2 days of break, and I was glad that I did. I mean, as you said, it's a hard watch. It's kind of difficult not to feel sort of wrung out afterwards, but it's also like just really compelling television. I mean, it's technically marvelous, and I hope it's not too grandiose to say. I think it's really important storytelling. It, you know, for me, it gave immediacy to so much of the narrative about online life and the manosphere and the potential danger of it all that those of us who are working in boys' schools and caring for boys that we've been tracking and may have even seen in our own experiences, but it brought it so up front. And I'll be honest, I left the series just kind of wanting to wish certain things away, you know, like it's in this kind of denial as though, you know, we could recapture more innocent time. But then I was encouraged to write about it for our families. And you know, my little blog can't hold a candle to all the great think pieces that have come out after the series, and they're everywhere, and I encourage folks to track them down. But for me, the act of writing helped me to see like that the denial and the despair I was feeling wasn't really useful, and that we need to look at this series as an opportunity, not a declaration of surrender.
Yeah. I was speaking to my daughters the other day, and it's almost like what it's done has brought really important conversations to the fore that maybe people were skirting around. And so possibly even in your blog post that, you know, kind of confronting these issues, particularly as communities of where we have boys in our care.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we seldom go wrong by trying to make more explicit what is implicit. I think that allows us to surface challenges and opportunities. And if we believe in conversational culture, I think that's almost always a healthy first step. Yeah.
Yeah. John, so reflecting on your experiences at the Browning School, you know, I wonder, are there any ways in which the series mirrors some of the real challenges you face and possibly other boys' schools face in guiding boys today? And you know, why is this conversation so timely for the boys in our care?
Yeah. So thank you. I mean, it's, and forgive me if I go on for a while, because I love my school, our school. But, you know, Browning, like all of our schools, it's just full of great people. Like, we have these amazing boys. We have this impossibly talented and committed faculty and staff. We have genuinely and deeply supportive families. You know, but all of us exist in a world where where like the social ecology shown in adolescence, like it may not be prevalent, it may not even be likely, but it's certainly available, right? And you know, maybe I'm dating both of us, but as long as there have been teenagers, there's been teenage alienation, right? You know, but instead of kind of processing that alienation through certain kinds of music or books or just hanging out with friends in person to complain about adults in the world, you know, the online space is it's offering a different kind of outlet that advertises some really reductive but sometimes frighteningly attractive answers, especially to boys and young men who are feeling lost. And one of the scariest elements of the miniseries, Bruce, for me, is that the most dangerous things can seem to happen while your son hasn't left his room.
Yeah,
right? You know, as parents, I was certainly trained to protect my kids, my sons from alcohol and drugs and smoking. And I certainly grew up in times where I could have experienced those things myself. Those were available, but I'm not sure how to protect my kids from the internet because I didn't experience it as a teen, right? I'm not sure how necessarily to contend with algorithms that can draw boys into these profoundly antisocial spaces. And so what's really challenging about this moment for me is that there's this often like dangerous, like hidden apparatus that's been built to take advantage of adolescent weakness and insecurity and uncertainty. And you know, virtually every teenager is going to feel lost at some point, you know, even if only for a moment. And so the danger can feel like pretty ambient, right? Like even the so-called, you know, quote unquote best boys, they could slip into a place that we don't recognize, and they can do so unnoticed. And that may not be likely, but it's our worry. And I think that's what gives such immediacy and such importance to this conversation. I was grateful for the prompt that the series offered.
You alluded to the fact that some of us as adults, and maybe many of us, are out of touch. Even those of us who might be immersed in technology for our work or whatever, I think we struggle to decode the digital world that our kids are facing and that boys are facing in particular. And so I'm wondering, as we think about the faculty you mentioned, you know, your faculty and really caring and intentional about boys, what concrete steps do you think we can take as boys' schools to build that digital literacy among educators so that they start really understanding the platforms and languages that shape boys' lives that you've mentioned?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And I'm so glad you mentioned kind of the adult struggle, because that for me was some of the most heartbreaking stuff in the series, right? Like you have these parents, these police officers, this psychologist, none of them are villains. They're all doing their best. They're all sensitive, but they're just kind of like outmatched, right? For me, the second episode of the series, as a school person, you know, one of the saddest moments is that episode. They go to visit Jamie's, the accused boys. They go to his school, and these police officers are seeing just how many things are getting in the way of learning, like how the kids aren't connected, how there's this code of banter that's prevailing no matter what the school intends. And then, you know, to your point, to your question, Bruce, like there's one of the teachers says to the police officers, in effect, like, look, what do you want me to do? I'm just a tutor, right? Or I'm just a teacher. You know, and like, you're a teacher. I'm a longtime teacher. I'm sympathetic to the idea that we're asked to take responsibility for a lot of things. But like, if we're serious about relational learning, and Bruce, you and I both know, you know, that research and experience tell us it's best for boys, we've got to take these steps to understand where our guys may be coming from. You know, like by analogy, like I'm a humanities teacher. I don't necessarily love all that like AI or ChatGPT can enable, right? But I can't just sort of throw up my hands and say, I'm going to keep teaching as I did in the pre-chat world. Like, I've got to learn. I got to adjust. And I think holds true. The same holds true, I think, for the digital world, right? Like there's this online context in which our boys might be living. And we need to acknowledge that. We can't just say like the miniseries teacher, you know, this is just beyond me, because it's not a passing fad. You know, it's not something that should cause panic, but it certainly deserves our professional attention. And I wonder if that could come from sort of multiple voices within our schools. You know, like we have folks in information technology or media literacy, and they could show faculty and staff members like how these algorithms work, how boys find these sites. And they could walk us through what is this kind of gradual radicalization, like how seemingly simple video on physical fitness leads to a more manipulative video on how the world is telling boys and men that they're not allowed to be masculine, which leads to a deeply misogynistic video about how girls and women are shallow or dishonest, and they're playing the male world against itself. And there's something helpful, I think, in all of us as teachers and staff seeing firsthand how this video pathway is created and pushed at boys, because what's key for us to understand, I believe, is that it doesn't necessarily begin with misogyny. It instead begins kind of innocently, and it takes advantage of the fragile masculinity that so many of our boys are trapped in. And so I think we also need to hear from counselors and psychologists and wellness leaders who can offer us like the best understanding of what's going on with boys who get swept up in these kind of digital spaces. We need to understand the attraction, the language, like the economy of who gets rewarded and why. One of the things that I found, like we can't just like lead with our judgment about how antisocial and sexist and unjust these spaces are, though they are. Like we need to do more than just shut our boys down. And so, you know, more than any programming, what like, I think would be most beneficial to us, Bruce, is a disposition of kind of like cultural curiosity, a kind of instinct towards a deep exploration of our boys, because this isn't something that's going to be solved instantly. It's not going to be resolved by some sort of one-off PD session. It's got to be ongoing and student-focused and adult-initiated talk about our obligation to care for our boys. Like we got to be engrossed with our boys, I think, to meet the challenge and the opportunity that's here. That's what makes the most sense to me.
Yeah, you mentioned that I had a great conversation with Andrew Reiner again the other day about some of these things. You know, the author of Better Boys, Better Men, and he's currently working on a book that's focused on boys' resilience. You know, and we're talking about the importance of giving boys. You spoke about curiosity, and he was saying we need to create spaces in our schools in particular, because boys spend so much time there, for boys to be able to wrestle with issues and to share how they're feeling and feel safe to speak about what they're faced with. Because if we don't provide those spaces for them in our schools, then they will go somewhere else. If we shut down the conversation in our schools, you know, they will immediately find their answers elsewhere. And so I think that whole duty of care that you talk about in terms of seeing where boys are at is so important. I mean, some of the stuff they might share with us, John, might be really, really uncomfortable, but it gives us an opportunity to have a conversation rather than being ignorant of what they're facing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's right on. And I mean, well, look, this is why Andrew has books and I don't, right? But it's super on the nose, right? I mean, I think so kind of implied in all of this is that, you know, we can't just curtail screen usage and think that this is gonna change, right? Like this isn't a supply side thing. This is the demand side conversation and getting really curious about what boys think is going on and how they understand their journey from boyhood to manhood. Like what are they looking for in these online spaces? What do they think that we as adults aren't getting? And what do they think the online influencers get right? Like we have to ask these questions. And as you say, I think so astutely, like we can't be afraid of the responses because boys are actually giving us a chance if they'll honor us with their honesty. And we need to mirror that back to them.
So John, I mean, you mentioned their screen time, and I think, you know, many of us would say that limiting screen time in some ways is good for boys, and you know, boys need to do other things but be on devices. But it isn't really the long term solution, is it? You know, what sort of innovative approaches or you know, how have you been thinking about, you know, helping boys navigate the digital stress they might feel, develop a kind of emotional resilience to these kinds of messages they get, so that they can make good decisions about what they do believe and how they do act ultimately?
Yeah, it's such a smart question. And I think it kind of amplifies the point that we just touched upon. You know, here at Browning, like we're in our second year of having kind of phone-free schools, right? And we think that's a step in the right direction. We think we're doing all we can to sort of be really judicious about screen usage. But like, you know, we've got to be in conversation. Like we've got to lead with genuine inquiry with our guys, or we're not going to have their trust, right? Like we should be absolutely giving our boys curriculum in digital literacy, on media literacy, so they can be more discerning and understand of how they're being consumed as they consume online. But we've also got to be really curious about why they're in that game in the first place. Like, you know, Bruce, so much of what interesting about adolescence, the series was like, you know, we tend to focus so much on how shaming takes place on social media, and that's correct, and it's truly awful. But we can't ignore that it's real life shaming and disconnection, which often drives kids to these places, right? And so, you know, you asked about if I have anything innovative. I'm probably looking more towards like perennial efforts to help keep boys feel whole, right? Like I'm thinking about how we can help boys reckon with some limiting and decidedly, in my judgment, limited definitions of boyhood and manhood without preaching at them in a way that's going to turn them off. Like you and I know that like boys and men are reporting, you know, levels of loneliness like that we haven't seen before. And we've also seen in the miniseries shows that loneliness, it often seeks relief in really bad places, right? Like an over-reliance on spaces, online spaces, on screens. We see like the performance of this narrow, hierarchical, hegemonic masculinity. We see, sadly, the rejection of institutions that boys are supposed to trust. And, you know, so a temptation for us as schools and as parents, right? Like we see things spiraling is we want to lecture our boys into compliance, right? You know, yeah. Like I sympathize because we want to draw lines. We want boys to know that like certain things are dangerous and misogynistic, but we need to keep in mind that boys come to these online spaces sometimes from a place of shame. And so we're not going to shame them out of it, right? Like if, you know, a couple of years ago, Bruce, I fell into this trap. Like I, an upper school boy here at Browning, you know, he let me know that he'd been checking out Andrew Tate, and he wondered what I thought of Andrew Tate. And my knee-jerk response was to declare Andrew Tate like a misogynist who was preying on boys' insecurity, and to say that Andrew Tate had nothing to offer anyone of good faith. And at the moment, I felt like, yes, I've shown him where his head of school stands on this. But it was the completely wrong response. Like I made it all about me. I made it nothing about him. And what I should have done was like mirror back the curiosity. Like, what did he think of Tate? What drew him to Tate? You know, I was so eager to be right, like to draw this clear line that I didn't recognize that he was inviting me to connect. And I think that's what we need to be doing, and finding spaces, both formal spaces, but also informal spaces to be asking the kind of questions that you mentioned, that Andrew mentions, you know, like asking boys sincerely, like, what do you think successful manhood looks like? Have you always felt that way? Like, what do you think we're misunderstanding? When do you feel connected? When do you feel disconnected? Like, who do you admire? Like, why? Has that changed for you? Like, you know, the older a boy gets, Bruce, I mean, I think, you know, I found it, the more resistance he's going to enact to kind of like being forced to adopt values that he sees as coming from someone else. But if we give him the time to, I think you used the word wrestle, or we talk around here, like to grapple with the meaning of all these big terms, right? I think that's where we get to sort of build the resilience that you described, the autonomy, because, you know, it's not a natural drive towards misogyny that leads boys to the manosphere. It's this fragility, right? And so we need to get boys to fully trust in themselves and to trust in the values they've been shown. And I think it's a mistake to try and force them in that direction. I think we've got to give the boys the opportunity to choose these values and relationships for themselves through conversation, through deep listening. And, you know, that might sound soft-minded, right? But I'll say, Bruce, like, I think either we believe in our boys or we don't. Like, we trust them to come to positive choices or we don't. And I think we always do better in the long run, you know, through conversation and dialogue and persuasion and not coercion. You know, that to me strikes me as something helpful.
John, I want to pick up on this whole idea of relational connection. I mean, clearly in adolescence, as I watch, there's a moment where there seems to be this real genuine connection that breaks through digital barriers. I think because boys spend so much time at school, as I've said before, you know, we need to be creating those kind of educational environments that foster those authentic interactions and engagement with boys that you've just been talking about. And I'm wondering how we can think about designing our environments to create those opportunities for relationship and interactions and engagements. I mean, I think it, in many ways for me, boils down to the kind of culture we create in our school spaces. But, you know, I wonder what your thoughts are.
Yeah, well, I love the word culture, which is sometimes I think maybe overused or misused, but I think it's actually crucial here. And you know, you mentioned these poignant moments. And like for me, the most heartbreaking, the most inspirational moments in the series actually come between fathers and sons. We see Jamie and his father just sort of foundering. I sort of landed on there's a moment where the lead police officer guy called, I think his name is Luke. I think he makes this big break in the case while he's visiting Jamie's school, which happens to be his own son's school too, right? And the break comes when his son Adam's his name, I recall. Like he clues Luke into what's really been going on, right? Like online, and there's this system where boys and girls create status and shame for one another. And what's really touching and I think inspirational about the scene is like two things. First, like the break comes because Luke actually takes the time to really listen to his son. Cause we've seen hints in earlier scenes that hasn't been happening. And look, that helps Luke professionally, but also Luke is recognizing in real time that his son is also something like of a social pariah himself, right? Like someone who's being bullied with regularity, someone who's probably closer to Jamie than he had thought. So Luke breaks the case, and we think, given what we've seen, he's going to go back to the station and keep driving hard. And instead, like, he invites his son to go get like some chips, right? And like come get a soda. And his son initially kind of resists, right? Like he says, well, look, you've got your case. And Luke responds by saying something like, look, I've got some free time and I want to spend it with you because I love you. And I think that moment, like, that takes place between a father and son, but I think that moment's an example for schools, right? Like, Luke is showing his boy that he liked him, right? In addition to loving him, that he saw Adam. And that no matter what's going on in school, or even especially because of what's going on in school, Luke's going to be there for him. And I think the implication for all of us is that boys want our presence, our time, our curiosity, and it can be hard to give them any of those things if we're too busy or too distracted. And like, look, isn't that a novel insight? This is like, you know, cats in the cradle stuff from like 50 years ago. But I also know it as a parent, speaking only for myself, I know that I'm working too hard or too much. I think it's often in the service of the boys in my home, and now they feel neglected. So there's this real catch 22. And I think the analogy holds for schools, right? Because schools, at least schools that I'm associated with, they've never been busier or faster places, right? And if we're busy and we're fast, it's usually in the service of giving more programming, usually academic program designed to make sure our boys are getting ahead. And look, we see why schools make those decisions, because some of us charge like really large fees, and some of our parents come with really understandable concerns about the next level of education. So if we're busy and we're fast, it's not for not understandable reasons. But one of the lessons of the miniseries, I think, is for adults and adult institutions to pull back, right? And to see, like, what needs are we really trying to meet? And are those the biggest needs of our boys right now? Like, you know, so many schools are under pressure to deliver, right? To do more than they have, to give their boys a leg up, as it were. But like, you know, I feel like the faster we go, the more we do, the more we risk undoing our commitment to relationships, to knowing and loving our boys, to the whole boy. And, you know, like, I live in maybe the fastest city in the world, and kind of proudly so. So I get it. Like, we want to do a lot, and we want to do it well. But the miniseries, adolescence, it's reminding us that autonomy takes time, that connection takes time, that purpose takes time, and we can't rush these things, and we can't pretend that they'll just happen without our attention. So when Luke pauses to be with Adam, to see Adam, to show Adam his love, like, I think there's a model for that. Like, there's not something sacrificed. Like, Adam is going to develop academically. Adam is going to develop intellectually. But Luke is giving an opportunity for health and resilience that he's going to need across a spectrum of activities. And I think there's something for us in that that we ought to be looking at.
Yeah. Do you think there's room, John, for parents, schools, educators, possibly even digital experts to work together to kind of support boys as they traverse these complex interplays between the real world and the online world?
Yeah, it's a really good question, because I think it gets to the importance of how schools and families can kind of come together around connection, around shared values, and find, like, we talk a lot, at least in our school and other schools in Minnesota, about partnership, and I think it's important that schools can help families understand the reality of what's available online. Because look, even if we're aware of what's out there, if we've kind of done the reading, as it were, we're not always sure about what it looks like when it happens. You know, it's easy to be lulled into this kind of false sense of security that, like, when your boy isn't like acting out in obvious ways, like, Jamie isn't acting out in obvious ways, but he is lost, right? Like, he's desperate to be liked. Like, one of these poignant scenes where he says to his psychologist after ranting at her, it's like, look, do you like me? Right. And so, like, we need to be constantly updating and attuned to what it means to parent and teach when there's this invisible world that we didn't grow up with out there doing its thing. But, like, even beyond, like, the technical awareness, I think families and schools more than ever need to be aligned on the values that we're hoping our boys will adopt, or at least observe. Right. You know, I it's not that I think some families would, like, endorse the pathologies of the manosphere. Right. I think it's more about making sure that parents are on board with, like, the whole of a school's mission, like its values, its vision of character education. Like, if families think that boys are wasting their time by helping boys understand and negotiate this fear, if they feel like social and emotional learning is somehow taken away from academic growth, and, like, it's not going to be a recipe for good partnership. And so I think it's incumbent upon us in schools to be really explicit about, like, the requirements of our missions, the ideals of our missions, and how much we need families to fulfill these missions. And so, like, giving them opportunities at wellness education, like, you know, through assemblies and meetings and publications, like, to help teachers and families to understand you know, the boys need physical affection. They need emotional connection. We got to be super vigilant about what they're facing. We need to be, we also need to be clear, because I want to be really clear about this, is that the point is not to demonize like so-called masculine values, right? The point is to emphasize that all boys like should have the opportunity to share in human values, whether they're coded as masculine or feminine. They're all great and they're all important, you know, like, and we don't want families to feel like we're being critical of their parenting, but we should be using our school as a platform to share the latest research on what's healthy, what threatens that health, like how we can be working together to help boys make their own informed choices. So yeah, like we want to be partners around technology use, but we also need to be in conversation about what vision we share for what healthy boyhood would look like and what that requires of all of us.
Yeah. John, maybe this is an unfair question, but you know, are there kind of, do you think this is something we can measure? You know, how might we know if any strategies that we're implementing in kind of this world that we're in now, especially around the digital challenges that boys face, that we've been talking about, some of the things that we've mentioned here, you know, how might we measure if boys are truly getting to that point where they're autonomous, where schools have nurtured this autonomy, where they're growing in resilience, where there's a growth in connection. But that seems like quite a hard piece for me to know if we're getting it right.
Yeah, I agree. It's a really good question. It's a really tricky one, right? Like, I, you know, we still struggle to measure what it means for a boy to succeed in math or in language. And, we would have curriculum around this, right? But I don't think that a boy's grade in media literacy is going to tell us fully, you know, how he sees himself and how he might be able to resist aspects of the digital world. So I think you're right. I think it's tricky. And I think like anything interesting, it's got to be sort of polyvocal, more voices, more variables included. So like, for example, like I think we should be looking at in part, like, just like on the input side, just, how often do boys voluntarily go to see our counselors, our wellness folk, right? Like, I actually think that a good level of traffic in those offices is a good sign. And I would want to know, you know, because I would see it as indicative of how our boys trust in our school's resources and its people. So I think that's like an input we could be looking at. I don't think it would hurt to see how much time a boy or even an aggregation of boys, like a grade level, like how much time they're spending in co-curricular activities, particularly those like which demand in-person engagement and relationships. You know, I think it's more difficult to get lost in the manosphere if like you're really engaged with student council or robotics or acting in Macbeth, right? You know, our IBSC friend, Matt Engler Carlson, at an event I was at recently, he said, if you want to know if someone is healthy, measure their social interest, right? And that really resonated deeply with me. And then, you know, in the spirit, Bruce, of like kind of keeping boys in conversation, like once a month, like in advisory or in like a house system or whatever apparatus a school has, like we'd ask all boys, just like give them a single question. Don't make it onerous. Don't make it overwhelming. But say like, we would love your response on this. We will keep it anonymous, but we would love to know like how many adults in our community do you really trust? Or compared to last year, are you spending more time or less time or the same amount of time in online spaces, particularly with folks you don't know personally? Or even something as simple as like on a scale of 1 to 5, you know, how in control of your social life do you feel? Right. And like, you know, like survey responses, they can fluctuate, you know, particularly on the mood of a boy on a given day. But I think if you collect that sort of information and input over the arc of time, weeks, months, even years, like it can tell the school something directionally about how engaged its boys feel, about how they're spending their time, about their own sense of wellness. Right. You know, and then I would want to append to that, Bruce, like on the flip side of asking boys like how many adults they trust is asking our faculty with regularity to identify how many boys they feel like they truly know, right? Because I think that's something which is it measurable? I mean, it certainly gives us something more than it's vague. If it says like these 7 boys, I can stand up and tell their story. I can promise you that. Like that's really reassuring. That's a good place to start from. And you mentioned culture, and I need to say it again. I know I'm being repetitive, but like there's just no substitute for this kind of culture of curiosity, like an environment where the boys know. They know the adults are interested in them, right? So it's good to gather feedback. It can be good to measure how many activities they're in. Good to survey them. But the best tool here, right, is to take an honest look at how willing boys are to talk to their teachers and their advisors and their coaches and their dorm folks, and how intent those adults are to make themselves a reliable outlet, right? I think you named it. I think this is less about best practices and more about best culture. You know, the kind of culture that the school and adolescents lacks, but I think the kind of culture that we can be providing in IBSC schools.
I think we have such a great opportunity here to make a difference in the lives of boys. And for me, that has a lot to do with what they will be like when they leave our spaces. And so I think I'd love to leave this conversation with a positive word from you in terms of the role that boys' schools can play as catalysts for nurturing tomorrow's difference makers. I think you spoke about those human values that are so important. And I always think, you know, if our boys can leave our spaces, yes, educated and having a future academically or whatever it is they want to pursue. But if they're the kind of humans that are going out into the world and seeing the need and making a difference, isn't that something that would be wonderful to see over and above them maybe being moguls of business or whatever it is that they choose to do? You know, so how do you see boys' schools doing that, being catalysts for a whole host of human beings who are going to make a difference in the world despite the challenges of the digital landscape that we've been talking about?
Yeah, gosh, I mean, Bruce, I'm on board for your vision, right? I appreciate you asking me, but I just like co-signed, right? You know, and I appreciate the question because I don't want to, you know, we look at adolescence like the miniseries, and I want to give this like kind of like unrelentingly bleak, you know, view of like this like Hobbesian social world where like our boys and girls are forever being assaulted and always need to be on guard. I think we've actually got all kinds of reasons to be hopeful right now, right? Like first of all, it's good to remember that the miniseries is fantastic, but there's a pretty simplified equation at the heart of it, which is kind of like bullying plus online space is going to yield violence. And there are instances where that's surely true. And there are many, many, many more instances where there are interventions and there are opportunities for redirection that are available that the series didn't show us, right? And so I think in our schools, right, like we can be sites of these things. I think we're lucky. You know, maybe ironically, right? I think we're lucky to be living and working at a time where we know more than ever about what helps a boy be healthy and connected and thus thriving and flourishing. Like we know, like for example, and I hope it's becoming a truism in our conversational spaces that contrary to all these stereotypes and assumptions, boys are often actually deeply emotional and deeply in need of emotional connection. And like we have a chance to provide it. Like boys need to know that they're loved. That's where we can be. Like when adults display love for their kids, not just verbally, but through gestures, when we support them excelling in all sorts of spectrums, like it's great to be good at academics, it's great to be good at sport, but it's also fantastic to be good at arts and social impact and civic service and just being a good friend. Like if we celebrate boys in all those ways, right? Like they're not gonna be ducking to the manosphere for affirmation because they're getting it right up front. Right. And look, you know, we know that boys have always gotten media messages about what a quote unquote real man is, right? About how to perform a certain type of masculinity. And now we know these messages aren't just coming through film and TV and music, but they're coming in online worlds. And look, we can be frustrated by that, but adolescence, the show, it's nudging us to a different kind of engagement with our kids. It's giving them a different kind of attention. It's given us the opportunity to know that like what worked for some of us as boys, what might've worked for you and me might not work the same way anymore because the context has shifted, but that's no reason to give up. Like we can all move in terms of our flexibility. There's nothing that adolescence shows that's preordained or impossible to change. And those of us who are lucky enough to be in boys' schools, I think we have a real advantage in all of this. Like, because all gender schools can certainly give great care and attention to boys, but boys' schools, like we are set up as these huge affinity groups, right? To borrow language from elsewhere. Like we can be explicit and intentional and direct, not just about what to avoid, right? But what our vision for positive living, positive masculinities are. Right. Like our vision for the kind of flourishing that comes when boyhood is connected, when it's allowed to express and embody like a full range of human virtues and activities from things that show strength and independence and courage, but also compassion and cooperation and openness, like the whole gamut. I think we can offer this countercultural narrative, this healthy narrative about the various ways that boys can thrive and the kinds of relationships and practical skills and emotional wellness that it all depends on. You know, like I mentioned Luke and Adam, right? Like the story of Jamie and sadly, the story of Adam suggests a possible way forward. Like Luke takes the time to see his boy, to respect what he has to offer, even though it might not be Luke's thing for his own personal life. And Luke is explicit about giving Adam his time, his attention, his curiosity, his presence, most importantly, his love. Like you get the sense that Adam has a real chance at the autonomy he's going to need because he's getting the connection that he needs. And so boys' schools, Bruce, I don't know why boys' schools shouldn't be like Luke kind of in macrocosm, right? Like we're places which want to model values for boys, but give them the chance to explore and express who they are and be committed to seeing and hearing and loving them and the value of in-person presence and connection and give them the autonomy and the connection and the purpose that they need to be admirable men, like men who put meaning and accomplishment and accountability and care into the world, right? Like that gets me going, right? And I don't think, you know that the miniseries can raise an eyebrow for us, and I think it should, but it shouldn't shake us from what we know. We know what makes a healthy boy. We have some ideas about what makes a flourishing life, and we know what kind of environments make this most likely. So I think we're more than enough as a coalition, as individual schools, and as individual practitioners, both content and discipline experts, but also relational experts and people here to love boys. Like if we give them the needed attention and resources and patience and love to guarantee those environments in schools, I think that's a really healthy answer to a challenge that's pretty immediate. I'm sorry. I know I kind of get going, and I appreciate your patience with that.
No, it excites me, and I think it gives me hope because I know, John, that you know your school is one of many in our coalition who are really working hard to do right by boys and to give them every opportunity at this sort of holistic sense of success and helping them understand the impact that they can have in the world. So I think this is a great sort of note of hope to end this conversation on. Obviously, like you said, a show like Adolescence kind of opens our eyes maybe to things we need to be aware of and talking about. But thank you for just sharing your insights and your own grappling with this issue. And it's just been a fascinating conversation, and I think it'll be encouraging to many. So thank you, John.
Bruce, I appreciate the time, the opportunity, and just when we're talking about what makes a great boy school educator, I think it's a lot of what makes a great colleague, and I always feel heard and cared for it, and when I'm with you in conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this vital conversation with John Boddy about guiding boys through the complexities of the digital age, brought to the forefront by series like Adolescence. We hope John's insights on the need for cultural curiosity and enhanced digital literacy among educators, coupled with strategies that move beyond simply limiting screen time, prove valuable. His emphasis on fostering resilience, creating safe environments where boys can grapple with difficult topics, and prioritizing deep relational connections provides a thoughtful roadmap for schools and families. Let's continue building supportive cultures that empower boys to navigate the online world safely and develop into the thoughtful, connected, and positive difference makers our world needs. That's all for now. Until our next episode, keep on championing boys' education.